If you go to New Orleans, you ought to go see the Mardi Gras. And when you see the Mardi Gras, somebody will tell you what's carnival for. It's time for the SAFTAcast, the only podcast that talks to writers, editors, and publishers about everything except writing, editing, or publishing. I'm your host, Scott C. Episode number, I'm not going to say it because it's a cheap joke, of the SAFTAcast is here, and man, have we got a good one for you. Before we get to it, as always, I'd like to tell you a little bit about some upcoming stuff from Sundress Publications and the Sundress Academy for the Arts and its subsidiaries. We kick off today's news with the Sundress Reading Series. We have spoken about this many times in the past, and I always like to bring it up on here because it is a worthy thing to talk about. The award-winning Sundress Reading Series returns to the Knoxville area this coming Sunday, February 26th at 2 in the afternoon at Bar Marley, 760 Stone Street, Northwest Knoxville, Tennessee. This time there are three amazing writers on the bill, and they are Minadora Macharet, Clay Matthews, and Andrea England. This, my friends, is a free event and is truly worth your investigation and participation if you are in the Knoxville area. Again, that is this Sunday at 2 p.m. at Bar Marley, 760 Stone Street, Northwest Knoxville, Tennessee. But speaking of Sunday, maybe you're not in the Knoxville area. Maybe you're somewhere else in the country. Maybe you're somewhere else in the world that evening. And you say to yourself, Scott C., I can't be at that reading, but I want some Sundress-related poetry. Well, have I got an answer for you? And the answer is Poets in Pajamas. If you don't know what Poets in Pajamas is, it is a free online poetry reading from a variety of writers, courtesy of the Sundress Academy for the Arts and Sundress Publications. It is, again, free and online, delivered through Facebook Live and through Periscope, if I remember correctly, but at the very least, it is definitely through Facebook Live. Past and upcoming guests, you can search out Poets in Pajamas on Facebook. But let me tell you real quick that this Sunday is the next one. This Sunday, again, February 26th at 7 p.m., log on to Facebook and you can catch Poets in Pajamas number 9 featuring Christopher Bowen. There's some great ones there. And again, you can see the past episodes there. If you search out Poets in Pajamas, run by former SAFTAcast guest Sam Slaughter is in control of that. And he's doing some amazing stuff with that. I tune in whenever possible. And if I can't, I always check the replay because it's amazing stuff, my friends. That's some stuff coming at you here at the end of February. Now, coming toward the end of March is a little something we like to call the SAFTAcast third birthday episode. Every year we like to celebrate our birthday, and now we are past the toddler age of the terrible twos, and we have entered 3 years old, going on 3 years on this program, and we have got a great guest lined up for that and everything, but more on that in our next episode in just a couple of weeks. Stock up on your birthday supplies now, my friends, because I guarantee you it's going to be a good one, and nice promo as well attached to it. We're already in the planning on that one. That is a couple episodes away, and I do not want you to discount number 69 here. There, I finally set the number. There you go. Xochi Julissa Bermejo is an amazing writer and an amazing person to chat with, as you will soon hear. We get into a number of subjects. As you know, on this program, we don't really talk about the writing, but in this case, we do touch on it because so much of her life is tied to her writing, but it's also tied to so many other things. Let me put it this way. In this episode, you're going to hear a lot of stuff. We're going to hear about family. We're going to hear about California. We're going to hear about the power of women who submit. We're going to hear about the power of No More Deaths, the humanitarian organization, as well as the power of the beauty of the amazing actor Diego Luna, as well as much, much more. Settle in, my friends, because you are about to experience a wonderful episode with a wonderful guest. I will say up front, though, just so you're aware and you don't freak out, we did have a little bit of an audio problem with this episode. We did our best to sort it out here, and it's still entirely listenable, but be aware that occasionally, once in a while, there may be a little bit of an audio hiccup. Your ears are not deceiving you. It's okay, I promise. Don't worry about it. It's all good. With that said, let's just shut me up and get to the episode, but only after the theme song. Thank you.
Hi. Thank you for having me.
It's good to have you. Awesome. I hear many great things from you from a great many folk.
It's interesting. I got to meet some of the sundress people at AWP, and to find out where people are from is interesting.
And the majority are Tennessee, Kentucky. Now I'm part of the South Florida branch.
Nice.
But anyway, so I usually start off the show here by asking the burning question that is on everyone's mind. And today's burning question is, I was once told that all poets have a favorite type of tree. And if that's true, then what is your favorite type of tree?
I have never heard of such a thing, but I am going to say that I do have a favorite tree, and it's a redwood. When I was a kid, we used to go to camping at the Redwood National Forest and Sequoia National Forest, or Kings Canyon and Sequoia, up in California. And I just kind of fell in love with them and became a tree hugger at a young age and thought they were like the coolest things.
What is it about the redwood that's so appealing?
Their color? I mean, they're red. And then they're so old. They feel like grandparents or ancestors. And when you go up and hug them, I was serious about the hugging part. They're kind of like squishy and soft. They're so old and so wise.
I would never think that they would be not soft like a pillow, but I would never think they would be softer because I'm so used to trees being hard.
No, the bark on redwood is actually pretty like buoyant. It's really soft and squishy. Yeah.
Can you make boats out of it or something? Never thought about it. Like what? Because I always hear about saving the redwoods, but nobody ever talks about lumbering them. So I don't know.
Well, they've definitely been. I mean, I know redwood's been used on a lot of like houses and things like that, but I don't know about boats. Hmm. Not sure about that one.
I'm gonna have to mental note. That's what I'm gonna be doing tonight. Is looking up. Whereabouts were you born in California? Was it SoCal or North Cal?
SoCal. I was born in LA, and I grew up in San Gabriel Valley, which is a suburb of Los Angeles.
East side of Los Angeles, or
yeah, east side. Like Pasadena is in San Gabriel Valley, so most people know Pasadena. I'm close to that.
We've had a couple of LA guests on the show before. What was San Gabriel like? Because LA is such a mash of different architectures and cultures. What was San Gabriel like?
Right now, it's kind of famous. It's been kind of this mecca of Chinese food and cuisine because there's a lot of that influence right now. So that's a big deal. I actually a group of us started this club that we call the SGV Food Club, and it's all poets and writers, and we kind of hang out and just try different restaurants in the area and hang out and talk. And sometimes we talk about poetry, but mostly we just gossip and enjoy each other's company and some dumplings. So yeah, that's kind of what it's known for right now.
You say right now, was it always known for that, or was it different maybe growing up?
It was different growing up. There was more I think before the 70s, there was a big influx of people from the Midwest. Like my family, we have these best friends that we've been best friends with because we all went to grade school together. So we've all known each other since we were like 5. And their family came in the 50s from like Indiana, it's like Midwest states. So it's just, I think there's always like different people coming into this area and it changes.
Is that the way it is with other California neighborhoods?
I don't know. I think San Gabriel is interesting because it's pretty diverse in that there is like older families from the Midwest and then the Mexican families that came in through that were like immigrated like half a century ago. And now there's the new Chinese immigrants and other and also Vietnamese and other. So I mean, there's been a book written about it that I keep meaning to read. I think it's pretty unique.
Do you get the chance to go back there quite often?
I had been living in a few different places in LA, and then I was living outside of Dodger Stadium in a place called Solano Canyon for 5 years. But at the end of last year, I quit my job, and then I got a fellowship from San Jose State University, and my parents let me move back into their back house. My mom had it all planned out. She kept trying to be like, you should move in. And I was like, no, I'm not going to. And then she like painted it and she'd be like, what colors do you like? And she made it all nice and comfy and cozy. And then all of a sudden it worked out.
Did it feel weird to return to your home?
At first it was nice and comforting. But then it soon became, I actually have my own, they have a back house. They have two houses and they used to rent it out when I was a child, the back house. And then different people would move in. We'd kind of move people around as we were growing up. And then it was empty for many years. And the whole thing started because I was worried that they would randomly get squatters because they weren't going back there and they weren't checking on it. And so then that got my mom's brain working and saying, oh, well, you know, you could live back there. So that's how it started. And then coming back, like I said, at first it was comforting and then it just got a little bit difficult because there's no privacy and I would see my family. We're close. I have nieces and nephews and I like to see, but I would see them about once a week and I would see them, you know, on my terms. And then it became that, oh my, you know, they can knock on my door at any time or not even knock and just come in, which is crazy. So it's been difficult, but then slowly it's also, it's given me enough opportunity to travel, and I have, you know, a book of poetry that came out in October, so it's given me an opportunity to travel for my book and promote the book and kind of have freedom to do those things. I just have to remind myself of that.
When did you move out of the house originally? Were you a teenager or?
I moved away, yeah, like college, and then I'd come back here and there and then move out to some other place. I mean, my parents have always kind of had a revolving door at their house. My brothers and I have all kind of come back at different times. But I hadn't lived in the house in probably 5 years. I was living in LA.
Did you feel like they were kind of treating you like you hadn't aged at all? Like that 5 years hadn't happened? You had just been away like at summer camp or something?
No, they were really, especially my father. My father gives me a lot of distance, you know, gives me a lot of distance and is like, doesn't come back or knock on my door like ever because he's like she doesn't want me back there, so they you know, they give me a lot of space and they don't treat me like a kid. It's just that it's like I don't get to choose when I want to see them anymore, you know.
Mom didn't redeck the house or redeck the room to make it look like it did back then or anything like that.
Yeah, no.
You know, move out and it's like now it's the sewing room,
right? Well, because it's not even, I never lived. Again, it's like two separate houses, so it's like they're my neighbors, and I never lived back here before. So it's not like I moved back into my childhood room. I moved into like a different part completely, and it's like I have my own house. Like there's two bedrooms, there's two bathrooms. It's like a little, it's this little house. It doesn't feel like I'm a kid. It just, they're just too close sometimes.
It's like they're, like you said, neighbors, except that the young ones, maybe nieces and nephews, don't understand that.
Yeah, exactly.
It's like, oh, we can go knock on the door. Pum, 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 pum. Guys, seriously.
And then I'm the keeper of the Wi-Fi password, so they'll just run through my house just for Wi-Fi.
Well, that's awesome that you're so close with them as well. Was that always the case, like growing up with them? It was like a tight-knit family?
Yeah, we've always been really close. I have three older brothers. We also have, like, I have a lot of cousins that I'm very close to, and my aunts and uncles. My father is one of seven kids. And his parents lived in Boyle Heights. And so we all kind of grew up together, all my cousins and everyone going to that house every weekend. So yeah, we're a pretty close family. And we fight a lot. And we also laugh a lot. And we bug each other a lot. And then we like hug.
Can't even begin to conceive how awesome like a family, holiday dinner must be with that kind of family where it's just all these awesome people together in one place.
Yeah, it's really loud and confusing and people aren't always listening, and it's funny. Yeah.
but you wouldn't trade it for anything.
Oh, no. You know, like I meant, I had my book come out in October, and like half of the audience was my family. And my poet friends were like, first they were like, wow, I've never seen so many people at a poetry event. And two, they were like, we've never seen family at an event. That's so nice. And yeah, my entire family was there. My aunt had cookies made in the shape of bookmarks. My cousins have a silk screening business. They made totes with a book on the tote. I mean, they were like all super excited. My dad got tacos, a taco guy to come. It was really cool.
I've never heard of such awesomeness for a book release like that. That is the most Okay, that you just set the bar, I think, for it.
Yeah, people were like, this was more like a wedding than a book release. But it was all thanks to my family. And another cousin decided she was going to make a candy table, like at like they do at weddings. And I was like, okay, if you want to do that. And she had all this Mexican candy out for everybody. It's my family.
You just set the bar for all of our listeners who are expecting their books to come out. I was like, damn, now I gotta beat that. How? Maybe I'll actually do a wedding, you know? Come for the marriage, stay for the book release, you know? I don't know.
Exactly.
Oh man, that sounds totally awesome. I mean, you're still close, obviously, with your parents. Are you close with your brother still?
Yeah. I mean, they drive me crazy. But yes, I love them. And we, like I said, we see each other once a week. I have a brother who lives in DC, and I was out at AWP, so I got to see him. He took me to go see a play at the Ford Theater, which was really cool, and we had dinner.
What play was it?
Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf?
Ooh.
Yeah.
He just died too recently.
Right, which is why they did it, I think. And it was interesting because, like, you know, the Ford Theater is a piece of Americana, and then the play itself is like stuck in time Americana. It was a fun show.
Yeah, that's a tough play to do too. Like, just to sit through even. It's a disturbing play.
Oh yeah, and it was the last day of AWP, and I did not know it was three acts long, and so I fell asleep a couple of times. They were like yelling and throwing alcohol at each other and glasses breaking, and I was like taking a nap. But it was a good play. I was really tired from AWP.
I'm guessing from the way you describe it, this was not your first rodeo, so to speak, your first time at AWP.
It was only my second one. The first one, I'm from LA. I'm in LA, so my first one was last year.
What was the change? What was the difference between last year, the first time you went, and now the second time?
It was hugely different. I was way more comfortable in LA because, I guess, because it's my city. I could go home to my apartment. I had all my friends around. We all were in panels and different, and we all had tables, and it was like our own little party. We were like so excited to show the writing world what LA was about. So it was really awesome. And then this is my first time traveling to an AWP, and it was just a lot lonelier.
Did you find any like tips from last year of like how to handle it the next year? Like the next time you go, this is what I've got to do or not do.
I don't think from the year before because it was so different because it was like home turf. But a friend of mine wrote a great article about how to do AWP and about, like, you know, drinking plenty of water, having snacks, having a battery for your phone, things like that. And, like, you know, being open to making dates with people, but then being open to changing them. So I had all of her tips in my head, which were really helpful.
Treat it like any other con. You're going to, you know, except that you're going to get asked to about 30 different events every night. And you got to decide which friend you're going to piss off by not going to their thing.
Right. Yeah.
And expect, I'm seeing a lot of my friends right now, what sometimes get called the AW plague, the con crud.
Oh yeah, everyone's sick. It's pretty crazy. Or they were sick last week.
Yeah, hopefully you didn't get sick this year.
I just drank a lot of alcohol, you know, it was like my insides were pickled, so I was good.
Take that, bacteria.
That's right. Next year off, I'm going to wait for Portland. I have friends in Portland, so I'm gonna wait.
I'm hearing some chatter that people don't want to do Tampa, and I don't know why.
Yeah, I don't know. It's not Tampa. It's just the whole thing was, it's like interesting. So I think maybe every other year is a good way to go.
Maybe. Hopefully I'll make it to Tampa next year. But we'll see how it goes. But it's awesome that you had a good time. What were some of the really cool things outside of, you know, going to Ford's Theater and getting to see Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf? What were some of the really cool things you experienced at AWP this year?
I was working a table for my MFA program, Antioch. And then it turned out that Carolyn Frechet was like sitting behind me and at her table. And she like introduced herself. So I heard her name and I was like, what? So I introduced myself to Carolyn and I gave her my book. And I was just like, yeah, I mean, her book, A Country Between Us, was like the first time I was like, oh, this is what I could do with poems, like activist poetry. I could totally do this. So yeah, I just told her that and I was like, oh, I wouldn't have a book if it wasn't for your book. And I gave her my copy, a copy, and I was just really excited. That was really cool. And she was very nice and like, oh, thank you. Sitting at the Latino Caucus table for a book signing, that was really fun. Just meeting people there. So yeah, the Sundress table was really fun because I don't really get to meet a lot of the people on the team. I mean, I met TA and Aaron last year. And then this year I got to meet a whole bunch of people just sitting at the table, which was really cool, and getting to know people and like putting faces to all the work Sundress does. Cause I mean, there's so many different arms of Sundress. So that was really a lot of fun to do that.
I think TA and I tried to figure out one time, and something like there's 12 different branches at this point with Sundress at this point.
Yeah, it's, I mean, it's wild. And, you know, when I say, oh, I'm published through Sundress, people are like, oh, what's that one? And I'm like, well, Best of the Net. They're like, oh, like, that's the first thing people know. But then I'm like, yeah, but they have, they publish books and chapbooks, and there's a residency, and they're like, what? You know, and there's journals. Yeah, it's crazy.
We've got a podcast, we've got a vodcast, we've got now a Periscope thing going, Poets and Fajitas. It's like, what are we not doing at this point? You know?
Yeah, it's wild.
But that's awesome. What were some, conversely, what were some of the low points of AWP this year? You don't have to name names either.
Right. I just, like, I think, just the awkwardness. I was trying to explain this because it's like, I always think, so I always tell people, I always think the Academy Awards have to be like really awkward because, you know, all those people know each other, but they don't really know each other. And so I kind of feel like that's what AWP is like. Like, we all know of each other, or you think you know someone because you think of their online persona, but you don't really know them. So just those kind of awkward moments. I would see somebody and I'd be like so excited, be like, hi. And then they would give me this look of like, why are you talking to me? Or do I know you? And then I'd be like, oh, okay, never mind.
the awkward, do I shake your hand, give you a hug?
Yeah, and I think too many times I went in for the hug and people were like, I don't think we know each other like that. And I was like, oh, we don't? Okay. And then it was like a downward spiral. Then somebody would say hi to me all excited, and then I'd be like, I don't know. Do we know each other? I'm confused now. I don't know who I know anymore.
Maybe we need something in between the handshake and the hug, like a high five or something.
Oh, high fives. Yes. I'm going to start high-fiving people.
Like, okay, I know you. Hi. Here's a high five.
And yeah.
It's like halfway there.
Yeah. I'm gonna steal that from you. I'm going to start high-fiving people.
We'll put that out there. We'll try and make that a thing next year. It's like, okay, everybody, if you're not sure where to go for the handshake or the hug, go for the high five.
Yes.
It's okay in neutral. Just don't miss with the high five and punch them in the face, in which case, unless you wanted to.
Yeah, or you miss and then accidentally slap them in the ass as they're like walking away. Was that bad? Like, I didn't mean to. This is not what I was going for.
I don't know. Maybe you could play it off like, thanks for purchasing the book.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. We might get in trouble for that.
I know. Sorry.
It happens. Other than the awkwardness, was there any other like weird or just like kind of odd moments that took you back? You're like, well then.
There's this woman who came up. I was at a book signing at the Latino Caucus. So, you know, I had my book out and this woman came up and it was like, she was just going from booth to booth trying to sell her book, which I guess was one way to go. And I guess it was about like Frida Kahlo. But so anyway, she came up and she was like, do you know Frida Kahlo? And it was just strange because I was wearing a Frida Kahlo necklace and I was just like, well, yeah, I think I do. And I was, yeah, it was just a weird
moment. Well, not personally, but.
Right. Well, then it was like, who doesn't know? Well, like, what a strange question, because who doesn't know who Frida Kahlo is at this point?
I know, you know, at the very least, I know of her.
Right.
You know.
Right. So it was just a funny little moment. And I was just like, I'm wearing the necklace, so I think I know of her. And then I was like, oh, by the way, we're sitting here signing our books. If you want to look at our books. But she had like no interest. And I was just like, okay.
She's
like, come to this booth for my book. And I was like, okay. And it's like a weird exchange. It's like, maybe you should, if you look at my book, I'll look at your book.
Does that happen a lot at AWP where people just come basically unsolicited and try to sell their book or get someone to purchase their book as in like, you know, pick up my book?
I don't know. That was the only time that happened, which I just thought it was really strange. Like the question was strange. And then two, I was trying to be like, well, hey, guess what? We're like, it was me and another poet. We're like, well, we're here signing our books. Do you want to check it out? You know, like, do you want to? And then I was like, oh, I have a Frida poem in my book. You want to look at it? But she had like no interest and just wanted to like tell us to go to her booth. I don't know. It was just like a really weird, like, why would, what? Okay. Like, again, that's one way to go, you know? So yeah, that was just an interesting exchange.
I don't think I've ever had something like that when I've manned a Sundress table, but I hope not. It's like, I don't know what to respond to. It's like, hey, would you publish my book? Not me personally, no.
Do people come up and say that?
I feel like when I was in Minneapolis or Boston, at least one person did try that move, and it's like, that's out of my hands. Thank you for asking, though.
Yeah, it's just, I also wonder, like, there's got to be, I mean, I didn't have any kind of agenda except to, like, take the book around. But, like, I feel like other people go in with, like, major agendas and, like, I'm going to hit this table and I'm going to talk to this editor and I'm going to do this. And it's like, that just sounds so tiring to me.
I know what you're talking about. I have a small one, and most people I do know have similar one, kind of what you're saying, but not in the devious way. More of like, oh, I've got to make sure to go over to X Journal to see so-and-so, you know, while I've got the chance, but not to go, oh, I've got to go to this editor because I want them to publish my book.
Right. Last year was my first one, and it was like Saturday at like 3 that I realized, oh my God, I can go to these journals and tell them thank you for publishing. And it was like, I like scrambled last minute. It's just like, it didn't dawn on me until then. And so that was really cool.
That's always the best time of Saturday afternoon where you can make deals with everybody.
Right. I get the books on.
Sounds like it was a good time though.
It was. Got a lot of good books. I've been reading a bunch of poetry all week. Just kind of eating up what I got at AWP, which has been fun.
Did you get to do readings while you were there, like offsite, and you know, actually do any readings or just attend?
I went to, Aaron and Fox organized a reading, so I read it that one, and it was at Madam's Organ, which I could not. People kept asking me like, "Oh, where's your reading at?" And I was like, "I have no idea. The words don't fit my brain because like Madam and Organ don't go together." And then a friend who knew DC was like, oh, it's a play on Adams Morgan. And I was like, oh, I didn't get that. Anyway, so yeah, I went to that reading. It was a lot of fun. And everyone was awesome. And the bar was really cool and divey. And there were like animal heads on the walls and things like that.
Kick ass. That sounds pretty awesome. So it's a nice relaxing week now back in Los Angeles to kind of decompress.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, you guys got hit with that massive superstorm, like one in a century kind of thing it looked like.
Yeah, there was like giant sinkholes that cars are falling into and weird things like that and trees falling. I just mostly stayed home and tried not to go out because it was just the streets were flooded. I mean, people always make fun of L.A. that like a rainstorm gets us all in like an upheaval, you know, but an earthquake nobody notices. But I mean, as I tried to explain, it's like we have so much infrastructure for earthquakes. Like we are set on earthquakes, you know, we're good. But rain, nobody ever thinks to like, hey, let's take care of these streets and make them better for rain because we never get rain. So yeah, it kind of turns our streets into like insanity.
It's like snow in any other town.
Yeah. Yeah.
Was there a lot of damage to San Gabriel, your area of town?
Just the roads are all chopped up and, you know, some people lost electricity. I mean, I did go to Target and the Target's lights were flickering the whole time. And like the parking lot was like, there was like a foot of water in the parking lot. And you couldn't walk across it. It was very interesting.
Wow.
So you gotta like park in a different parking lot and take a left treacherous way to the store.
Yeah, I saw some of the photos and the Twitter videos and such were coming out, and I'm like, wow, this is almost like hurricane level out there for, you know, what we have in Florida.
And the river, that was really exciting. I was like Instagramming the Los Angeles River because it's usually like a trickle down a cement pathway. And then this was like this huge river, like, you know, it's like rapids. I was like, wow, that's cool.
That is awesome. I mean, it sounds awesome. It's like, at once, it's awesome and terrifying.
Yeah, and I was seeing on the news that, you know, and then it always happens that when we have a storm like that, some kid or some person gets, like, swept down the river. So I was seeing the news about that, and thankfully this kid got, you know, was saved. Everyone was saved and fine, and so, yeah.
And you now we have, thanks to the wonderful comedy that is the internet at times, we now have at least one person doing something completely stupid while a weather reporter is broadcasting.
Right? Yes. Which is always fun.
I didn't see any of that out of L.A. Like, right before that, when the snowstorms hit, there was a guy dressed as a pot Bigfoot, like, stalking around a Weather Channel reporter.
That's amazing. No, I didn't see anything. I also don't watch new. I mean, I don't watch TV in like regular time. I only like Hulu and Netflix and stuff. I only saw that story because I was like eating. I was out having some Chinese food, and it was in the restaurant. I was like, oh.
I don't know. So you mentioned you don't watch a lot of TV on there outside of Hulu and Netflix. What are you currently watching on like Netflix or Hulu right now? What's grabbing your interest?
I'm having a hard time finding something I really want to watch. Well, on Hulu, I love to watch, what was it, Fresh Off the Boat. And then I, on like online, I watch Jane the Virgin and Crazy Ex-Girlfriend. But Crazy Ex-Girlfriend just finished, their season. But yeah.
So you do keep up with more modern comedy or anything? Do you go back online on the services and watch some of the old stuff and just like binge on something like old Cheers episodes or anything?
I just saw that on Hulu they're now showing Golden Girls. So I'll probably be watching some Golden Girls soon. I love that. What else? I used to watch Friends, but it doesn't hold up. Like, it's really outdated when you watch it now, I feel like.
I wonder if the Golden Girls is like that as well.
I think it does. I mean, I've watched episodes like when it comes on TV, on like a Sunday afternoon. It's still good. But Friends, just like, yeah, Friends does not hold up.
I would think it. I would think so. I never watched it in the first run, and I don't know if I'd watch it now. I didn't really care about any of those people.
Right. Buffy is something I'll go back to. Gilmore Girls. I'm a Gilmore Girls person. I go back to that a lot.
I gotta get into that series, I feel like. So many of my friends, male and female, identified either. It's like they all agree. It's like it's a great show. I'm like, I just haven't sat down with it yet. What makes Gilmore Girls such a great show?
It's smart and it's got a lot of wit and banter. That's what it's known for. Also, her parents, who is played by Herman, what's his name? Herman? Oh, like they're both her, the people who play her parents are both like older actors from the 70s, and they're both amazing character actors. So they're like my favorite part because the main character is just horrible, self-centered kind of person, but her parents, I love her parents. So I watch it for them mostly. And then it's also like nothing bad's ever gonna happen. Like I like to watch it when I'm going to sleep because it makes me feel calm. It's like no bad is gonna happen in this world that doesn't get solved like a couple of episodes later, So
So there's nothing. It's not like a. Is it more of like a drama, or is it a more of like a just a general comedy?
it's a family, I guess it would be a family drama. But it has a lot of comedy. I mean, there's a lot of funny characters and quirky characters because it's like supposed to be this little American town, like with these like this little tiny town with these quirky characters that do weird things and they love to gossip and they all like the person who wears the different hats. Like this is the mayor. This is he's also owns the grocery store. He also is the person in charge of the festival. So it's those kind of characters. A lot of like. Colorful characters, I guess, like quirky and colorful. So it's funny and it's fun. And then there's family drama and they yell at each other. But I love family drama because, that's how family works. Like you yell at each other, you hate each other, but then you're still gonna come for dinner and you're still gonna hang out and you're still gonna have a good time at the same time. So I'm big into family dramas.
But it doesn't sound like then you were saying it's like a comfort show. Like nothing world shattering is going to happen on it. Things get resolved and things work out in the end for them. That is probably the best type of show to go to sleep to.
It's like there's no Trump. It's a happy little world. Just gonna watch this and go to sleep.
I miss those shows. It's like it's hard right now to enjoy anything, it feels like.
So I'm just not really that much into watching something dark. Like I was trying to watch Westworld. But I don't know, it's weird and dark, and I'm like, I don't really feel like watching weird and dark right now. I'd much rather laugh. So.
Know the feeling. I did binge Westworld right at the end of the semester last December because everyone was telling me you've got to see it, science fiction. And I liked it overall. I have issues with it, and I don't fully have the verbiage yet to say what bothered me.
But I think I've only seen like three or four episodes, and I just kind of was like, eh. Maybe not.
And then Gilmore Girls. Right about then, wasn't it that they dropped the season on Netflix, the new one, right about there?
Yeah. And I was super excited for it.
Are there any Netflix series upcoming that you've seen that you're like, oh, I gotta check that one out?
Upcoming? I don't know. Like, I was really into, like, everyone. I was into Stranger Things. That I ate up. I, like, I could have watched it all in one night, but it was, like, 2 a.m. or something, and I was like, you must turn off the TV now. And then, like, got up the next day and watched the other 4 episodes or whatever.
I'm looking forward to that one. It's like, damn it, Halloween, really?
Is that when it's coming? It's not going to be here till Halloween.
Yeah, not till Halloween this year.
I'm cheesy again with the 80s, so I liked Fuller House, which is embarrassing, but yeah.
Not at all. I have yet to check that out because, like, I'm worried. Like, so many nostalgic 90s properties, I'm so worried that I'm going to watch it and hate it and be like, why? Why did this have to be? You mentioned Stranger Things a moment ago. What was it about Stranger Things that was so engrossing for you?
Well, I mean, yeah, being a child of the 80s, you know, the music, even the, like, opening credits and the way it looked, it was very Stephen King. And then it's also, like, a mix of Stephen King and Spielberg. You know, it was a little E.T., it was a little, you know, Christine or Carrie. You know, it's like, it had these... It was like a little mix of everything 80s and science fiction. I mean, the opening credits had me. As soon as I heard that music and saw the way Stranger Things was coming on the screen, I was like, yep, I'm in. I need to watch this and the whole thing. So that, I mean, that was just so cool.
I agree. My wife and I had to run to our Stephen King shelf and pause the video, grab a couple books and go, okay, which title is it more like?
Right, yeah.
Is it like Needful Things, or is it more like Four Past Midnight?
And it was fun, you know. I'm also like E.T. fun, and Goonies was like one of my favorite movies of all time. So it's kind of had that like E.T. Goonies, you know, this pack of, you know, kind of weird kids, not weird, but like misfit kids hanging out, solving a problem, solving a crime or whatever, a mystery.
That Motley Crue, you know, Goonies Never Say Die and Stranger Things Never Say Die. I'm curious if they're going to maintain it. Now, I did see an interview recently that directors said that they're going to end it. They promised that it won't last too long.
That's good.
They know that people are afraid that they're gonna wear out their welcome. They're like, no, we promise. We'll get it before it dies off.
I always like when a show does that, when they decide, like, you know, okay, this is only going to be 4 seasons. Because that's when that, you know, it keeps the show solid. Like when it goes on too long and then they, you know, jump the shark or whatever. And then they're trying to hold on to something. And then just the quality goes down. So I like when they say, okay, this is only going to be 4 seasons or 5 seasons. And it's going to be solid from beginning to end.
You hear that, Simpsons?
Right. I mean, I think my favorite TV show of all time is probably 6 Feet Under. Because it was... You know, it held its quality from beginning to end. And that ending was just so heartbreaking and beautiful. So I have to watch The Wire. Everyone says that that's the best TV show of all time. I have yet to see it.
It's good, but it's not as perfect as everyone says. I don't think there can be a perfect TV show.
Probably not. I think you're close. 90210. No, just kidding.
Melrose Place, you know. Models, Inc. Models, Inc. is the one I'm thinking of. I don't.
Was that the spinoff of Who's the Boss?
I don't remember. I just remember it was part of Fox's, like, teen dramedy lineup type thing. I've watched far too much.
We all have.
when you mentioned Stranger Things and Stephen King and everything, are you attracted to kind of, like, supernatural and ghost stories?
I'm not really, which is kind of funny that I was so in love with Stranger Things, but I think I was in love with it more for the nostalgia than the science fiction. I'm not a science fiction person. Like, I like E.T. I like Star Wars movies. Rogue One was amazing, but I'm not that into I'm actually not that into Stephen King. I loved that it was 80s. That's why I watched it.
Yeah. What did you think of the new Star Wars Rogue One?
Oh, I thought it was so brilliant. I mean, I love parallel stories. I'm working on a novel that's a parallel. And so the way they took, like, this little piece of New Hope, this little piece of information, and created a whole story out of it, I was just like, damn. And then I saw it the morning that it was announced that Carrie Fisher had died. And so, like, I was actually waiting for the movie to start when I saw she died. And then I didn't know anything about it, really. I didn't even know there was a movie until I saw something about Diego Luna, who I'm, like, obsessed with. I love him. I think he's amazing. And so I was like, wait, like, there's a new Star Wars movie and Diego Luna's in it? And what the hell? It's coming out, like, next week? Like, I had no clue. And so I didn't know what it was about or anything. And then, yeah, watching it, I was just like, okay, that's how you do a parallel for sure. And I instantly wanted to watch New Hope again. And yeah.
I am not going to argue with you on Diego Luna there. I had not known his film career until I saw him in Rogue One, and I'm like, who is this guy? I need to know more about him. Because and then I was listening to a review podcast, and I'm like, oh, he was part of E2 Mama Tambi, and I'm like,
oh yeah, well, that's how he got started. I mean, that's what made him famous. Him and Gael Garcia Bernal, they co-starred in that, and then that's what kind of got them, catapulted them into fame. And then, but they've had like a long friendship, and they're they have a production company together, and they do a film festival together, like an indie film festival together. And they just do so much work for like creating like specially socially conscious work and Spanish language work. And like, I just am so in love with both of them, but Diego's my man.
He's also very easy on the eyes. I will not argue that.
But yeah, they do. They both do amazing work, and I love that they're like best friends and they support each other. And yeah,
so that,
and then I just loved that. You know, there was like a tweet that he had put out about how somebody had contacted him and said how wonderful it was to see a hero with an accent, and that it wasn't even a big deal. That's just how he spoke, and that it was like, you know, nobody ever shows a hero with an accent. And like, that was really touching to me because yeah, my father has a similar accent, and you only see jokes about it. Or like, you know, I always think of Ricky Ricardo and how he gets made fun of for his accent. So here was somebody with the same accent, and it was like, he wasn't anyone, it wasn't a joke at all. You know, he was a very serious heroic character, and I loved it.
I think I saw that, that post that the father was like so proud that he kept his accent, didn't change it, and it was very natural, and it fit the character.
Yeah.
It fit perfectly. And now, I gotta say, I was impressed with that movie for many reasons, and Diego definitely. Have you followed his career pretty much since it began?
Pretty much. I've seen probably almost everything he's been in, and not like the American films aren't that great. I mean, he was in like Dirty Dancing, Havana Nights, but I had to see it because he was in it.
My sympathies.
And then he was in that like that movie with Tom Hanks where he's stuck in the airport.
Oh, The Arrival?
Yeah. Is that what it's called? Where he's like,
something like that,
yeah. His country goes into civil war, so he can't leave the airport because he doesn't have any kind of like. So yeah, I basically, if he's in a film, I am like 90% bound to see it. But what I'm more impressed about is actually his production company and his film festival and the work he does with his partner.
I'm going to have to do some more research on him and check out a few of his older films. He was one of the people in that film that really impressed me. I was like, why have I not heard of this actor? I need to know more.
Yeah.
If we keep bringing up Posada, and I'll come back to that in a moment, but let's move away from entertainment for a moment real quick, because I'm curious to know. So you haven't always been in Los Angeles. You were saying that you'd gone away for a time for college and everything. Did you, as I understand it, at some point around maybe 2010, or you went to Arizona for a bit?
Yeah, but it was only like it was like 3 weeks that I went out to Tucson and to the border to volunteer with No More Deaths, a humanitarian aid organization out there.
I've heard the name No More Deaths. What are they exactly as a group?
So it's a Unitarian, it was started by a Unitarian church out in Tucson, and they have a lot of different arms, but one of the things that started them was that they go out to the desert along the Arizona-Mexico border, and they camp, and they patrol migrant trails, and they put out water supplies and food supplies for people crossing, and then they're also giving first aid to people when in need and being a witness to Border Patrol abuses. So that's like on the U.S. side, they do that. But then also on the Mexican side of like the Nogales border, they have like places where they set up support system for people who've just been deported, and they help them like give free phone calls so they can call home and get in contact with people to, you know, figure out what they need to do. They also help get back their belongings because the Border Patrol will confiscate their things, and often they have like, well, money or and they'll take all their money and then they'll give them these like debit cards that actually can't be used and are kind of useless. So they help them get back their belongings. They help them get back their money. They're also recording stories of Border Patrol abuses. And they have like, I think like now they have like at least two big reports of like the kind of abuses that people have been suffering from along the border. And then, yeah. And then in Tucson, they do a lot of work at the courts because there's what's it called? Operation Streamline. I think it's like every Thursday. It's like once a week, they are like mass. There's these mass trials of like 20. I've seen it twice. I think it's like 20 to 30 different people have like one mass trial, and the judge will say some things and they'll tell them their rights, and then they just get one by one. They kind of get like shot down with like a felony, or maybe one's not a felony, and then they get either like, and then they just get sent back. So it's called Operation Streamline because they're trying to, you know, quicken the whole process. If they get a felony, they have to stay and they are put in prison. And then sometimes they are just sent back across the border. So they're like doing work to try to stop Operation Streamline because it's like a civil liberties issue. I mean, like having these mass trials and deportations, it's pretty horrific to watch.
It sounds horrific.
And then they're like, they get picked up in the desert, and then they're just put into detentions and they're not given any kind of like anything. So when you see them, they're like, they've probably been in the desert for, you know, at least 5 days, and then they're put in detention for a couple of days. And when you see them, they're still wearing the same clothes. They haven't been able to bathe. You know, they've barely been given any food or water. They have injuries on them. Yeah, it's horrible. They can't speak English, you know, and they're in this American English court. There's more than No More Deaths. That's just the one I worked with, but there's also another group called Border Angels, and there's another group called Human. Oh, I don't know, but there's a few groups doing similar work in the area, which is good. I mean, they need a lot of support. So,
well, I encourage more support for them, you know, because it sounds like they're doing basically, if I dare say, the Lord's work, you know, and move like that. So you were out in Tucson and volunteering for a few weeks, and then came back to the LA area or back to San Francisco?
The LA area.
And you've kind of just stuck with California since then. What is it about California that keeps calling you home, essentially? What is it that, I don't want to say traps you or keeps you there, but what is it that you really love about the state that makes you say, this is where I want to be?
I love California. I mean, you know, you can go to the mountains and you can go to the ocean. It's got some of the best national parks. I love Yosemite. I love Sequoia National Park and King City. And it's got San Francisco and LA. I mean, it's a cool place. And you can have all the avocados you want and you don't get charged. Well, you still get charged extra, which makes me mad. But you know, avocados are great. Citrus is great. It's, yeah. And it's also, you know, because especially in LA, I mean, I really enjoy how diverse it is. You know, I was talking earlier about this, that where I live in San Gabriel, it's a mix of like Chinese, Vietnamese, Mexican, and then like Caucasian Americans in one place. And so I really enjoy how diverse LA is. And I sometimes wonder if I went to another place, like, how would that be? How would I feel? Like, you know, I went to Portland on my book tour and it was really homogenous. And I'm like, wow, okay, I don't know if I could live in Portland. Something I think about, like, diversity is definitely something I think about when I think of moving out of Los Angeles. Where could I really live where I would be comfortable? I could get some good food. I could meet some good folks, things like that.
It sounds like it'd be so awesome to be where you are. It's like, as you were saying, it's like just walk down the street and meet seven different people, go to seven different restaurants, and just be awesome.
I was somewhere the other day. I can't remember where I was. Did I go to a museum? No, I was just at a restaurant. But I heard like five different languages just walking around. And I was like, that's great. That's so cool.
I think the only place I've ever encountered such a scenario is New York City.
Right.
We've had other Los Angeles guests on this program, and every time, I know I say this on so many shows, I gotta get out there, but when it comes to LA, I definitely have to get out there one of these days.
For sure. It's a great city. I mean, I think it's hard for people visiting because there's no city center, and so I think people get confused. And if you, you know, it's a really sprawling city, but if you, you know, hit me up. If you know someone, it'll be better.
I think there's a few writers out there that would be like, yeah, you got to get in touch with me here. I got to tell you this place.
Yeah, because otherwise it's too big and you'll end up going to like Hollywood Boulevard, which is not a good idea. And
boring.
Yeah, exactly. So.
Yeah, if I go to LA, I'm not going to go to the touristy areas necessarily. Right. I want to, you know, it's like, oh, that's the Santa Monica Pier. Neat. It's like, oh, Rodeo Drive. Whatever. Moving on.
Yeah. Right.
Next time, if I go out there, I will make sure to hit you up for recommendations.
Yes, definitely.
Before we take off in any direction, I want to just get to a couple things real quick. One of the projects that I know you're associated with is also doing amazing work in its own right, and that is Women Who Submit.
Mm-hmm.
How did you get involved with them?
So there's three co-founders, and it started with Alice Dixon, and she was working with Vita back before it was Vita. I can't remember what it was called. It was called something else. And she was working with them, helping them figure out how they were going to do their count and how to do their website. And she was helping them in different ways. And then the numbers came out, what was that, 2009, I believe. And I think it was the second year the numbers were out, showing the disparity between male and female representation in publishing. And the people in the group started asking editors why the numbers were like that. And the editors were saying that women don't submit as often and they don't submit as aggressively, especially resubmit as aggressively. And so Alice had this idea as a response to that to start these submission parties. And, you know, she was kind of like, what if we get together? What if we share resources? What if we make these like working meetings for women and support them getting their work out and help get those numbers up? So it was her brainchild. And then she was in LA at that time and she had talked to Ashaki Jackson and they had come up with some ideas. And then Alice asked Ashaki for maybe someone who had some community ties in LA. And so Ashaki asked me to get involved. And so the three of us together planned our first submission party, which was in my parents' house. And we had like brunch and I made quiche and I think like six women came over and we had a lending library or sharing library of journals and we had a printer set up and we had envelopes and stamps and, you know, examples of cover letters and we had our first party. That's how it started. And then that was in 2011 and it used to be just us in each other's private homes and it was around like quarterly when we first started. And then like 2 years ago, we decided to do a grant proposal and that kind of helped us focus and make it more public. And that's when we started doing like public orientations and inviting more people in. And we started a blog and we started a Twitter and a Facebook. And now it's like ginormous. But it just started with like six friends hanging out in someone's kitchen.
That's why so many things start that way. But yeah, I've been seeing Women Who Submit come through a lot of different places and a lot of different mentions recently. Not just recently, like in the wake of post AWP, but in the last few months, I keep seeing it more and more, and I'm like, excellent work.
Oh, thank you. It's exciting. We have like 19 chapters across the country. Well, across the continent, because there's one in Mexico and there's one in Canada. We have in LA, we have about 100 members. And it's like really open, which I think is really important. So every other month we have these like public orientations where we open it up to anyone who wants to come. And so we're always getting new members and we're always open to new people. I don't think we'll ever like close unless we're like close up shop. We're done. Women Who Submit, retired. Let's just call it. But we're never going to like close our doors to new people.
I hope you don't ever get that tired feel either because you're doing amazing work from what I can see. You know, keep it going. Keep it kicking ass.
Thanks.
Yeah, let's talk about the book real quick here. Posada came out with Sundress last fall and This is another one of those books, and I'm not saying this just because I'm affiliated with Sundress. I am seeing a lot of mentions in a lot of places.
Oh, thank you. I'm excited.
What was most thrilling about this particular volume for you?
I mean, I worked on it for, I had worked on it for 5 years, and I had submitted it multiple times to different places, and I had worked on it. So basically, I would send it out. I wrote it 1 year, like, so say summer 2012. That was the first time I probably submitted it to places, and when it got rejected, I would work on it again and resubmit it and work on it again and resubmit it. So I did that like a few times over 5 years. So just like finally having it in the world was really exciting because I feel like I worked really hard on it. And then that I could like honor my family and their immigration story and honor my grandmother was also very personal to me. And like the cover and how the cover came together and the title came together, that was really exciting to me. And seeing, because the cover is my grandmother's front steps in Boyle Heights, or my grandparents' front steps in Boyle Heights. And I mentioned before that my family's always been very close, and we always used to spend our weekends at that house. And me and my, like, you know, 18 other cousins and brothers and everyone would just hang at that house and play on those steps and eat our ice cream on those steps, because we weren't allowed in the front house if you had ice cream, and gossiped. And it was just like this space that was always safe and was always warm and loving. And so to have that photo that my cousin took, actually, and she gets credit inside the book, to have that photo on the cover was really important to me. And that worked out was like awesome. And I get so many compliments on the cover, which is like, makes me so happy, because I'm like, yeah, it's my grandmother's steps. My cousin took the picture, you know.
It always comes back to family.
Yes. Yes. Indeed.
Well, you mentioned that you have so many books after AWP, and you're reading them and catching up. And indeed, that is one on my shelf right now that I'm catching up on, and I am enjoying it so far. And I've got to say, you know, Sochi, I am enjoying our time together here. It is truly awesome to talk with you.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Before we let you go, though, where can the folks find you online? They want to check out more of your work, get to know you and your work a little bit more?
Website, sochiljulisa.wordpress.com. That's where you can see my work and the link to buying the book.
Are you on Twitter or social media?
Oh, yeah, I'm on Twitter. Sochiljulisa, Instagram, Sochiljulisa. Everything is Sochiljulisa. So yeah, find me on Twitter or Instagram. I love Instagram's my favorite.
So might have to, if the Saftacast ever gets one of those, we will look you up on there. But yeah, we just haven't gotten around to the Instagram train yet. We're like, we really don't take that many interesting photos.
I just love it. It's like, you know, oh, here's a pretty picture. Here's something cool to look at. Instead of like, I'm angry, or I'm going to say something snotty, which is like Twitter. Twitter is like snottiness, snotty world. And I go on there to say something snotty, and then I'm instantly like, whoa, why did I do that?
Twitter's becoming even worse than YouTube, I think.
Yeah. So that's why I like Instagram. I'm just like, I took a walk, and here's a beautiful flower for you.
Mental note, maybe I will get Instagram then and just post pictures of my cats or something. You know?
Exactly. Oh my gosh, I did a video of my cat while I was packing for AWP. It got the most like likes out of everything. I'm like, I should have known. I mean, cat videos, people love cat videos. So.
That they do. I'll have to shoot some more of my own. The two demons lying around. But anyway, Sochi, it has been so great to chat with you. I'm glad we got this opportunity here. Enjoy your many books from AWP, and may they do you well.
Thank you. Thank you so much for talking to me, Scott. All right, it was great.
Take care, and hopefully the rains have stopped out there and you can start drying out a little bit.
Yes.
All right. Take care. Have a good eve.
You too. Bye.
The Saftacast is a production of the Sundress Academy for the Arts. For episodes and more, visit saftacast.com. Until we talk again, this is your host, Scott C., signing off.